Let's jump right into it. I watched a movie last night. We Grown Now, in select theaters now, but nationwide on Friday, April the 26th. It's a fantastic movie. We're going through a huge moment here in Chicago. Chicago sports are nuts, especially this week with the NFL draft. What do you think about that, being a Bears fan?
You know, I love Justin Fields, actually. So it was a hard breakup for me because I wanted to see him play with more of these weapons we just got, you know, to the team. But, you know, we'll see what Caleb does. I liked him a lot in college, but it's as a Bears fan, it's just disappointing starting over, and we've developed somebody to me that has the same skill set to me and who I think is more further along with what the NFL is and the speed of it. Now we gotta hope that this kid is just as good as the kid at the Texans. And I don't know.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud. And I think kind of what you're pointing to is Justin Fields had a lot of support in this city. But the thing that I continue to point out is he had over 33 starts in the NFL, and it felt like he never quite got it rolling. Like, he would have a good game, and then he'd be off for a game.
Is that his fault, though? Is that his fault? Is that, you know, we saw these coaching changes, the offenses all over the place. We never had a real line. We had these – it's not his fault. Like, he actually did way more – I actually was more scared for Justin Fields most of the time because I didn't feel like he was protected enough.
Okay, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the protection aspect is fair. I think the decision-making in the pocket and getting the football out of his hand, I think that's something that I think we'll see with Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be a little bit better when he's decision-making, releasing the football, and, like, the development of plays. I think he'll give it more of a chance.
That's such an overthought thing to me. Every analyst and person I hear say that, and then you watch what Josh Allen does. Because I think the problem with sports is in general, it's so analytical.
Yeah.
And I still think that's overrated. You know, when you start, the numbers and the snaps and they did this and this. Man, just play football. Give a person the pieces to do what their job is. And if you do that, then we can judge. Because I brought up Josh Allen. Josh Allen make all the mistakes.
Okay? Sure. Oh, yeah.
If I lived in Buffalo, I would love Josh Allen because I know he's going to play. He's playing good football. Everybody's not going to be Patrick Mahomes, point blank.
Yeah, that's fair. I think also then my question would be, if you kept Fields, are you moving off of Matt Eberflus? Like, are you happy with the way Eberflus has coached up the team the last couple of seasons?
No. Between him and Billy Donovan, I feel like we just got the worst coaches in sports.
It feels like it. You know, the Bulls, the way that they were bounced in the play-in round, the Bulls at the moment are in this cycle of not really trying, but also not being bad enough to reap the benefits of being a team like tanking and getting the number one pick. They're just stuck in the middle right now.
Well, it's because, you know, look, I hate the fact when you have a situation where you really should be blaming a coach that the Chicago Bulls organization refused to do that. Refused to. And we have Fred Hoiberg, that crazy, stupid thing, and even hiring Bill Cartwright. It's just like, And then we get somebody that's decent, like a Tom Thibodeau, and everybody's mad at him because he makes his players earn their money because he plays them. You know, I'm getting started, man. Coaching is just, you know, the Bears, Lovie Smith should still be our coach.
You know what's funny about that is the year entering Lovie's last season as Bears head coach, the knock on Lovie was that he wins, he just doesn't win enough. And then Lovie Smith is fired, and then Bears go on this, you know, multiple situation where we build up, tear down, and we get Trestman and Nagy, and now Eberflus, which I think Eberflus at the end of last season was starting to get the players to play for him. It'll be interesting with a new quarterback how that kind of goes. But you're right. Lovie Smith at the end, the knock in the conversation here in Chicago was he wins, just not enough. and they haven't won at all since then.
You know, it is Lovie Smith, probably out of any NFL coach I've ever watched, not even just from the Bears organization, just got he's gotten a bad rap.
Yeah.
For just being a good coach, which is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. His bad rap is being not a good enough coach.
I don't know.
Like, you look at what Pittsburgh is a loyal organization. I love the fact that they are.
Sure.
They like, look, as long as we got a winning percentage, we can't necessarily fire this guy. We can't fire Mike Tomlin. They win it.
Yeah, and the stability has proven out through decades that they don't change off of coaches. They bring in new players. So I wanted to ask you this about, we were mentioning the Bulls. What would you do to fix this team moving forward? Because like we were talking about, they're stuck. People want to blame the coach, but you can't come back with DeMar and Vooch in the same group that you had last year.
Well, you know what the problem is that this team was built – this was Lonzo Ball's team.
Yeah.
This roster was perfectly orchestrated for Lonzo Ball being the quarterback and you know, the point guard, because – this is his team, you know, having people that could score, he can move. We saw it. Like, when he played, that's why they were so good, because this was his team. As soon as we lost our playmaker, our you know, him and Caruso's defensive chemistry was crazy. He was able to fill in the spots. Zach and DeMar they wasn't exposed as being bad defenders. You know what I mean? They didn't have to bring the ball up the floor and lose the ball all the time. All they had, it was Lonzo's team. And that's just, it makes me really sad, because there's nothing you can do about an injury like that.
There's really nothing
you can do about that. Only thing I wonder, though, because this is not necessarily a new injury. So I do wonder how much did the Bulls know at the risk of saying, we know there's a chance that it could happen again.
Right, the work that they did ahead of time before they signed him. You know, Lil Rel, one of the things that I was talking about last week is, did you see the first playing game for the Bulls against the Hawks here at the United Center?
Yes.
People were showing out. The UC was packed. People were amped from the opening tip. And, like, that's what Chicago Bulls basketball should be. I said last week on the air that it was embarrassing for the franchise that this is something that we get that excited for. And the reason being is, I'm a kid of the 90s. I remember the Jordan years. I remember the way this city pops when they're a great team in Chicago, especially this time of year. The overall conversation about the Chicago Bulls, isn't it a little disappointing that 30 years later, what we get amped for is a playing game?
That's not fair, man.
People were waving rally towels.
Can I tell you why it's not fair? I've been a Bulls fan my whole life. I watch every single Bulls game. I have the NBA League Pass. I live in LA now. I don't miss a Bulls game. I walk around my iPad. I bring it to set. If the game is on and I'm driving and me and wifey is going somewhere, she's going to drive so I can sit there and watch the game. That is how committed. Every halftime, me and my brother call each other. We do our little weird conversation about what's going on. We hang up because of the timing of our TVs, because one person might get it before the other. We're like, look, we can't watch this at the same time. I'll call you back. I'm time out. That is how committed of a Bulls fan I am. And the crazy part is, it's just so funny, because my wifey, she's from Mississippi. When I told her what type of fan I was of the Bears and Bulls and Cubs, she didn't believe me. And nobody realized, like, oh, this is a real thing. We need to leave him alone. Maybe a half hour after the loss, don't bother him, because let me talk to my brother. That's the only person I can talk to. We can calm each other down. Because we're legit. We've been bought into the Bulls since I was a kid. I have to explain this. I'm saying to you, I cried, and I was listening to Harvey Funk on the radio the year after Michael Jordan left in 93.
Sure.
And they called that crazy foul in New York.
Bulls
would have won that game. We would have went to the finals against the Rockets, and I think we would have won. And maybe history.
It was Hugh Hollins. Hugh Hollins was the official on that, I think.
I will never forget that. We thought, because it's the radio. We listen to the radio Yeah. Neil Funk was the greatest on the radio. Like, you know, he was, to hear him say, "This is disgusting," was where it rings in my ear for the rest of my life. Because we thought the game was over, the Bulls won, they're like, they called a foul. We was like, what? And so what I'm saying to that is, I'll celebrate any victory at this point. When Ayo and Kobe White started playing better, I got really excited because I see what we have. But I'm going to tell you something. I can't do Vooch no more. I may be able to keep DeMar Vooch. I'm sorry. Like, I his basketball IQ has been exposed. I can't do it no more. We got to get rid of Vooch. We bought Green back. I don't know why Green wasn't on the team. I have no idea why he wasn't still there. He comes back. He brings the energy he always brings. I recently saw like a very, oh God. This is my last little weird point. We can move on.
Yeah, sure.
Derrick Rose years, one of my favorite years before he got hurt, was that series against Miami. And we won game one, right? And Oprah had that thing at the United Center. And I guess we had to like have these extra days off. We had all this momentum. And we did the Oprah thing for a long time. And I love Oprah. I blamed Oprah for the Bulls losing that Miami series. Because they gave them too many days off to rest and recuperate when the United Center was rocking after that game one. And I felt like we had that series. But we took those days off for whatever that book tour was.
Right.
And Miami has LeBron has some time to chill out. Had some conversations, and they came back with a different energy. And oof, I've never said that in public. That's a good thing.
That's awesome. Well, I say this. I'm not, when I say it's embarrassing, I don't mean it's embarrassing for the fans who went and packed the UC because we're all thirsty for a good playoff basketball. It's embarrassing as far as ownership. And the way they run the franchise. Because, like, I look at it this way. The city of Chicago, the Chicago Bears bring everyone together football season, right? But there is no time that this city is more alive than when the Bulls are in deep playoff runs and it's warm out and there's watch parties and the UC's rocking. Like, there's nothing better for me. It's when the Bulls are playing well. So it's such a disappointment that ownership doesn't agree with that. And they're cool with just hosting one playing game. That's my problem with it.
I don't think, you know, but this is why like coaching is so important, man. I would love to see the Bulls really give a young one. Let's get one of these former NBA players to coach. I would love to see a Sam Cassell get a shot, or Pargo get a shot.
Yeah.
You know, but Billy Donovan, you know, I don't think he did a good job when he was at OKC. I just feel like he's always been kind of lucky. He's a lucky coach. Like when they was like, oh, he may go to Kentucky. I was like, please, quit.
Lorel, in the film, We Grow Now, there is a discussion about basketball, about the 90s Bulls. For those viewers who have not seen the film yet, describe what this movie is about. I thought it was fantastic. I watched it last night.
You know, it's a love letter to Chicago and to the Cabrini-Green residents, to be quite honest with you. You know, I think the way the media has portrayed residents in the housing projects for years is almost like they're all victims, or either they're victims or in the gangs and doing all the stuff. But I think people forget that it was real families in those housing projects, real, real families. And what this movie does a good job is it shows it from the perspectives of these two young men who did an amazing job, Blake and Gian, who starred in the movie. I love it from the kids' point of view because anything from a child's point of view is really honest. It's just really honest. It has to have opinions and all this other stuff that can construe that. And throughout the movie, you'll see that through the conversations, through the moments, that you can see through their eyes, the just how authentic and the innocence of being a child in 92. I grew up in 92. I was around their age in 92. And I can remember when the shift was happening in Chicago especially, you know, in those neighborhoods. I'm from the west side of Chicago, especially when we started seeing more of the gang violence and seeing innocent kids get killed through this. I just remember how, like, scared my parents were, you know, and it changed the way we played outside. It was a time we used to ride our bikes to the Chicago Stadium, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And just to watch Michael Jordan almost hit us with his car pulling out the ramp.
Now that's a story.
Michael! but you know, but it's just, it just took us back to that time and to just the innocence of it. And it's such a beautiful movie shot. It's such a beautiful conversation piece. Every time we've screened this movie, especially when we did in Chicago, the Q&As have been amazing, and the questions and the heartfelt comments from the audience have been really good. So Chicago especially, this is a movie you should go see. You'll be very proud of it. People always try to make movies based out of Chicago or from Chicago. Yeah. This movie, I believe, did an amazing job with showing Chicago and its realness.
No, I agree with you on that. And I appreciate that it wasn't like showing you Deep Dish and the Bean type of thing, right? Like it showed people living their real lives in Chicago. And I also think that I don't recall seeing a film about gun violence or gang violence from the lens of a child. And I thought that is what was pretty special about watching the film.
Well, the innocence of it too. It was, yeah. I like the fact that Minhal didn't, she could have focused on the tragedy. She could have focused, we could have saw, even when the, you know, in the movie, the police raid, like you don't even really see the police on camera for real.
Right.
It's still from their perspective of what's happening. You know, I that's the beauty of it. I love the fact that she decided to do this from not only just a young man, but from the perspective of the residents who stayed there, excuse me. So that's what makes it amazing. It humanized a lot more people that, you know, that lived in Cabrini Green than I've ever seen before.
Yeah, I would say there was a line that stuck out to me. I think it's when the mother says, "You guys can't play outside anymore," or "You can't right now." Yeah. And the line was like something like, "Well, what are we going to do inside?" It was like, that to me was like, oh yeah, you don't really think about it, like gun violence, and then you can't go outside. And from a child's mind, it was, "Why? I don't want to play inside."
Well, know, even like, when he says to his mom, you know, after they, you know, when they did school or whatever, and she finally comes back,
yeah,
and she's like, "I need to. The only way I can keep you safe is to know where you are." And he's like, "Well, you know, what happened to Dan Trail is not going to happen to me,"
right?
And she's just like, "You don't know that." Because from a kid perspective, he's not even thinking how dire the situation is.
Yeah. Did you like playing the father role?
I love that. I love playing the dad, especially in this movie, because it was a single father. You know, you watched his battle where he wanted to make sure his family was taken care of, along with making sure they're safe. And, you know, it makes me, like, want to high-five my parents. You know, a lot of times, like, even just like situations, even movies like this that take you back to a time, and you're like, "Damn, I was kind of, sometimes I'll be that kid, like, oh, why I can't do this, why I can't do that," and all they were doing was just trying to make sure I was safe. Yeah. And I didn't look at it from that perspective, like, damn, they in their early 30s, you know what I mean, late 20s maybe, and they just wanted us to be safe. And I'm like, I couldn't even imagine, even as a parent now, in that situation, the way my mind would have had to go to keep them safe.
Sure. I just want to ask this last one before we let you go. I appreciate your time. You were in LeBron's Space Jam movie.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, and we were talking some Bulls basketball, but in the movie, the 90s Bulls are referenced. Where do you fall on the LeBron and Michael conversation? Because whenever on the radio station it comes up, the phone lines light up, and Gen Zers, younger people, always say, "Hey, LeBron's the best player to ever live." And you know, I'm a millennial. I have to say, no, you didn't see Jordan. Jordan was absolutely the best. What do you think of that? You were in LeBron's movie.
So LeBron hasn't talked to me in a little bit now. And I've literally stared in his face courtside at Lakers Bulls games. And I get it, because I'd be talking hella crap. I be courtside talking crazy. I do the little "you too little" thing, you know. When Pat Bev did that, I was sure. Right there with him. And LeBron, everybody, Maverick, I'm talking about everybody speak to me. Everybody say hi. But LeBron. And it's all good. It's all good. Because, you know, people don't know. He went to Space Jam movie. He asked me to do it at a party. That is how it came up. That's how I got Space Jam. It was at a party that Drake was throwing in Toronto. It was a true story. I was shooting another movie out there. And we was all at this party. All I asked LeBron was, "Hey, LeBron, how the movie going?" They would start shooting it. He was like, "It's going great. What you got going on?" She was moving with Kevin. "Oh, yeah, Kevin was telling me about it, blah, 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 blah." Because we shooting Fatherhood at the time, me and Kevin Hart. And I got a call the next day from one of LeBron homeboys to ask me to do Space Jam. So I did him a favor. He don't even speak to me no more because I wear my Bulls stuff to Lakers games. What do you expect, sir? Like, if you can look at pictures. This is sea of Lakers colors. And me and my cousin and I are red and black.
That's outstanding. That's great. I love that.
I talk so much stuff where I don't care what the price is. I've paid some crazy prices for my little courtside seats. But honestly, that is why I wanted to be a star and make money. It's to go to a Lakers Bulls game and talk crazy in the Staples Center or Crypto Center, whatever center it is.
Yeah, the Crypt.
I talk crazy in there. So, yes. So, who do you think I think is the greatest? Michael damn Jordan. I watch The Last Dance at least 8 times a year. Full series. Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. Last week when the Bulls were eliminated from the playoffs, I saw a clip of it where Michael's talking about how, you know, being a jerk or whatever, but if you want to win, that's what you got to do. And I was like, damn, I miss when Chicago sports had that type of passion.
Let me tell you something. You know the backstory to that, right? That particular clip. That clip was the first thing they shot. They asked him one question.
I know where this is going.
And he went on that rant. And then he was like, "Break." And the whole crew was sitting there like,
"Oh, this is going to be good."
Not even that. They didn't even know what that meant. They never discussed that to say "break" when you're done. He just said that, walked away, and they all had to just sit there until he came back. Nobody knew. That was the first question. That was the first thing he said was, "Look, you don't want to play like that? Don't play like that. Break." Everybody's like,
"That's awesome.
Is he going to finish the documentary?" That was the first thing he said.
That's so great. Your new movie is out in select theaters, I believe New York, LA, and Chicago right now, nationwide on Friday, April the 26th. Laurel, what else would you want people to know before they go to the theaters to see We Grow Now?
Go see it's not an action movie, but it's a beautiful, beautiful big screen experience. It looks beautiful, it sounds beautiful, and you're going to truly enjoy this very, very human story.
Thank you, Laurel. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all.